Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Doug Tribou. New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady is waiting for NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to announce his final decision about Brady's four-game suspension for his alleged role in the Deflategate scandal. Goodell heard Brady's appeal late last month.
And now ABC News is reporting that if Goodell's ruling falls anywhere short of completely overturning the suspension, Brady and the NFL Players Association will take the case to federal court.
Joining us now to discuss what a federal case about the suspension could mean for Brady, the Patriots, and the NFL is Alan Milstein, a prominent sports litigator. Among his other cases, in 2003, Milstein sued the NFL on behalf of a former college player to challenge eligibility rules. Alan, welcome to Radio Boston.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. In the Deflategate case, the NFL ordered its own investigation, handed down punishments based on it, a $1 million fine for the Patriots, stripping the team of some future draft picks. The team opted to accept those penalties, but Tom Brady chose to appeal his suspension. That appeal heard by Roger Goodell. Does anything about this case stand out to you as being ready-made for a jump to a federal case?
Sure. You know, when you have an arbitration, generally courts are loath to disturb them. But there's two reasons why they will disturb them. And the most prominent reason is that the arbitrator is biased. Now, everybody, when this thing was started, was essentially saying, there's no way Roger Goodell is going to serve as the arbitrator because that's the surest way for Brady to be able to get to federal court. And lo and behold, that's exactly what he did. You know, so rather than appoint somebody who a court would see as a neutral, unbiased arbitrator, he chose to be both, as the Players Association puts it, both cop, judge, jury, and executioner.
Is there a precedent for an athlete taking the case out of the regular bargaining procedure and getting into the courts?
Well, sure. You know, both Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson took their dispute and their penalties that were issued by Goodell out of the arbitration process into the courts, and both were quite successful. So that's another reason why most people, you know, thought, at least those of us who do this kind of thing, thought that Goodell would be smart enough to try to appoint somebody who was neutral, so as to avoid the kind of embarrassment that occurred when the courts threw out his previous punishments.
From Brady's perspective, what would be a key advantage and disadvantage to making this switch?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, people have speculated that, well, suppose Goodell comes down and says, Brady, we're only going to give you a one-game suspension, a little slap on the wrist. It's really the Players Association that stands to benefit the most from moving this thing into federal court, because the Players Association is not happy with the way the arbitration process is set out in the collective bargaining agreement, which allows, again, Mr. Goodell or whoever's the commissioner to serve as both cop and executioner. So there's a bit of a conflict. If what Goodell does is reduce the penalty, the Players Association is still going to want to push Brady to go into federal court, but Brady may decide, along with the New England Patriots, that that's not what's best for him.
Let's say Tom Brady's suspension is reduced but not eliminated. Would you like his chances in a federal case?
Yeah, I would like his chances in a federal court because you know, if they're reduced, let's say, to two games, it's certainly going to seem arbitrary and capricious that somebody like Ray Rice gets two games for punching the lights out of his wife or his fiance, and Tom Brady gets four games reduced to two games for throwing an underinflated football. And what's particularly odd about this whole situation is that in the rule book, it essentially says, or in the regulations that the NFL proposes for itself, it says, you know, if this kind of situation happens, it's a $25,000 fine. Well, how suddenly did it become, you know, such an egregious situation that it deserves a four-game suspension?
Alan Milstein is the chairman of the litigation department at the law firm Sherman Silverstein. He's also a prominent sports attorney. Alan, thanks for speaking with us.
My pleasure. Take care.
And joining us now is Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. He joins us every Wednesday to talk about sports. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Anthony. Let it be clear that I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV.
And you know Doug Tribou, of course.
Yes.
All right, good. So we just heard there from Alan Milstein. What's your reaction to news that the NFL Players Association might be, according to ABC, ready to fight any suspension for Tom Brady in federal court?
I try hard to hold off responding to stories that begin might be. So I don't know what's going to happen, and when it happens, I guess I'll have an opinion.
All right. So we will wait eagerly for something to happen.
Exactly.
and your opinion. So let's move on and talk about the rest of the week's sports. Last night in Cincinnati, the American League topped the National League in the All-Star game 6-3. The Red Sox had just one All-Star this year, utility man Brock Holt. He stole second base, scored a run. But the biggest moment of the night happened before the game even began, right?
Well, the biggest moment of the night, at least according to all the stories that I've read about the All-Star game, was that Pete Rose was on the field. And
being celebrated.
And being
massively.
Celebrated as one of the greatest players, one of the four greatest players ever to be associated with Cincinnati. And who can argue? That certainly is the case.
Right. And that is strange because, of course, Pete Rose banned for life from baseball for betting on games.
The silliest ban that ever was. You know, people are saying, well, does this mean that someday Pete Rose will be welcomed back to baseball? He has been welcomed back to baseball. He was on the field. He's the biggest story out of the All-Star game, according to all the stories that I've been reading, which is a little bit nuts, and which will certainly help his autographing business, which is how he's been making a living for about a quarter of a century now.
Bill, new MLB commissioner Rob Manfred says he will listen to what Pete Rose has to say about this case. Do you think his appearance at the All-Star game is a sign that he's going to eventually be welcomed back?
I don't have any idea, but it's ridiculous. I mean, it's preposterous that the guy who has the most hits in Major League history isn't in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And if they have to pardon him or welcome him back or in some way excuse the fact that Pete Rose has committed all sorts of ridiculous blunders and you know, been an idiot for a long time, then do it. Get him in the Hall of Fame. And for goodness sake, get him out of the picture.
They could just put an asterisk, you know, the idiot asterisk.
Yeah, the asterisk is always a good idea in baseball.
Bill, as we mentioned, Rose appeared at the All-Star game as part of an MLB promotion that let fans vote on the four greatest players of all time.
Right.
He was representing the Reds. The Red Sox selected in that promotion were Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski, Pedro Martinez, and David Ortiz. Good picks in your view?
I would never say anything against those four ball players. They were all spectacular ball players. Yastrzemski, particularly in 1967, where for a stretch he may have been the greatest ball player of all time for at least about 6 weeks. However, I would like to point out that Cy Young pitched for the Red Sox for 8 years. This is a man who had 511 wins. A good number of them for the Red Sox. Let me give you four consecutive seasons with the Red Sox. 33 wins, 32 wins, 28 wins, 26 wins. What would a pitcher make these days if he could win that many games in consecutive seasons?
There was also a guy named Babe Ruth.
Yeah,
who played
let's talk
for the Red
about
Sox.
Babe Ruth a little bit. 89 wins as a pitcher, right, with the Red Sox. And in his final year as a starting pitcher with the Red Sox, he led the league in runs, home runs, and runs batted in.
To be
not
fair,
a whole lot of pitchers doing that these days. This is a versatility that is completely unprecedented.
To be fair, Ruth did have a little bit of success a little south of here.
He did. No question. Maybe he should have been one of the four players for both the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Bill, before we run out of time, the Red Sox 6.5 games back of those Yankees. Is it time to wave the white flag regarding this season, or is there still some hope?
We have to be a little careful with waving the white flag. I remember talking to a devout and committed Red Sox fan. I can't remember whether it was 2004 or 2007, but it was about this time of the summer, and he said, blow the team up. They're terrible. They're not going anywhere. And they won the World Series both of those years.
Bill Littlefield hosts NPR's Only a Game, which airs Saturdays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here on WBUR, and he joins us Wednesdays to talk about sports. Bill, thanks.
Thank you, Doug.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Doug Tribou. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.